Here's the outline. So this isn't a very new idea, where we're dealing with the cosmology of particles that are coupled to asymptotically free gauge fields. So I'll just briefly mention the other work that people have done, and then at that point move on to describe the model quotes that we're thinking about, and from there describe how it evolves cosmologically and what we expect the present relic density to be. After that, then I'll start talking a little bit about the potential signals of this model. So, particles that couple to some non-abelian gauge force, the cosmology of those has been thought about quite a bit, in both the context of this force being the actual QCD that we know, or some other dark force. Especially a few years ago, after the proposal split SUSY, and in scenarios where there are colored long-lived NLSPs. And it was noticed that at the QCD confinement transition, there could be enhanced annihilations that would allow some of these colored long-lived particles to be a little bit less dangerous for the constraints to be lightened on these things. And so here's a extremely brief listing of people who've worked on either the case of colored particles in the early universe, or on non-abelian dark matter, so on. So I'm sure that I'm missing someone. I apologize. Please come smack me after this talk and let me know whom I've missed, and if you're in the room, sorry.
Only if you put down the rockets thing.
Yeah. So our motivation is just wondering if it's sort of a natural picture that dark matter might be charged under some asymptotically free gauge force. A lot of the stuff that we know in the standard model is, and dark matter might have as rich a gauge structure as the somewhat perverse gauge structure that we know in the standard model. So it seems like that's a natural thing to wonder about anyway. Also taking this realization of the enhancement of the annihilation cross-section after the confinement transition might allow for us to expect the potential for a boost factor in the dark matter annihilation presently. So boost factor meaning an increase in this annihilation cross-section relative to the cross-section that determines the relic abundance of the dark matter. So here's the sketch. I'll just point out that I'm purposefully avoiding writing down a Lagrangian. I don't know if an equals sign appears even in this talk. There's all everything is sort of to orders of magnitude. This is both a feature and a bug, I guess. So the model that we're imagining is some heavy quark that I'll be calling Q with the mass that could be at the TeV scale, and it's coupled to some SUN, and that SUN confines a scale lambda, and there's a large separation between this scale and the mass of the quark. And then we imagine stabilizing the quarks against decay and against self-annihilation, I guess, or annihilation if these were, say, scalars, so the, by some symmetry, maybe some kind of Zn symmetry or something like a dark baryon number. And so I'll just move on to talk a little bit about what the cosmology of these things should be, sort of like. And so at about at temperatures close to the 20th or 30th of the spark mass, then they perturbatively freeze out, and the standard old time picture with a Rayleigh density that's something like this. Then the simple-minded story is that after this this freeze out, not a whole lot happens until the universe cools down to below this confinement scale, and then dark baryons or anti-baryons or mesons form at this point. So during this talk, I should mention that occasionally I'll just be taking n equals 2, so if this were n equals 3, then there would be free quarks here, et cetera. So,
how can they freeze out? How can they form bouncings if they're frozen out?
So, well, I'm imagining that that there's some strings that are breaking
freeze out doesn't mean that the interaction rate.
So the cross section for the cross section suddenly jumps above the Hubble rate, I suppose, because it's something like 1 over this scale squared, which is a lot larger than this perturbative cross section. So they suddenly sort of are able to see one another again. After this confinement transition, there is, however, the possibility that the density of these quarks could be further depleted by rearrangement processes like this one pictured here, where these mesons decay to some dark blue. It's difficult to estimate or to have a very quantitative estimate of what this cross section looks like, but at least if these things are non-relativistic, then there's some geometrical factor for the actual cross section, which should be something like the Bohr radius of these guys, there's a characteristic velocity, which is essentially if these things are moving non-relativistically. Then it's the velocity that matters is really the velocity of these quarks inside of the bound state, which is given by this. And so the cross section for this rearrangement process should look something spec like this, where this alpha is the dark SUN alpha at a scale of the typical momentum exchange inside of this bound state, these bound states. The requirement that this process not deplete the number density of these quarks too much gives you an upper bound on the confinement scale, or an upper bound on the ratio of the confinement scale to the quark mass, and then so for TeV scale quark masses, it's something in the tens of MeV ballpark. If this depletion isn't important, then the only sort of depletion that actually occurs at the confinement transition is just the formation of these unstable mesons. And so for large n, the number of quarks that end up falling into these mesons, the fraction of them is sort of difficult to estimate. At least for n equals 2, it's kind of maybe a little bit easier. We expect roughly half of them to form these mesons. For larger n, it's a little bit trickier. Probably there would be some modeling that would need to be done, or for some actual thinking. At the end of the day, the present relic density then of these hues today is just essentially dominated by the perturbative relic density depleted by this depletion factor, which is order, so 1/2 to the n or something like that, or to the n minus 1. Something of that order, but it's a half imagine for n equals 2. And the upper bound on this scale translates when you run the dark coupling to a lower bound on the present relic density of these supports. So there's a lot of pitfalls that are sort of the thinking about these things is what has made me change the name of the talk from involving model to just sketch. So it's at least for me difficult to figure out exactly right now what the consequences of the production of some of these blue balls, these dark blue balls, could be cosmologically if there's some pernicious effects if these blue balls are long lived or something, or if they are stable, and it would require some more exact model building. One way that I can imagine to deplete their number at least. Is to introduce another light-ish state or quark, lowercase q, with the mass kind of on the scale of lambda, and gauge it under this SU1, of course, and then also under some new U1 that kinetically mixes with the photon. Since these days everything that's beyond standard model requires that legally, and then these blue balls can actually decay to two of the new U1 vectors through loop diagrams, which, and then depending on the mass of these vectors, can go to, say, electrons or something like that. And parametrically, this range should be something looking like this, where alpha prime is the strength of this new U1. It should be proportional to the blue ball mass, which is a few times the confinement scale. Isn't strongly dependent on the value of n. And then there's some suppression by powers of this light quark mass. And power counting is this n here, the exponent, is some large number that would make these blue balls quite long-lived if this mass q were to... For the light quark were too much larger than lambda. So it's interesting to wonder what the consequences of these new light states are. Should apologize for not knowing exactly what these consequences are. I've also been wondering if, depending on sort of the representation under SUN that you take for these light quarks, you could also imagine stable mesons that are something like capital Q, lowercase Q bar. They could also be potentially stable and contribute to... Not negligibly to the dark matter fraction today. So, however, I in my head, am imagining that the representation under the SUN is such that these things don't actually form, so they can't form dark color singlets. And then I'm sure there's a few other things that I haven't thought about. So. You probably already have. So I'll just move on to talk about the annihilation of these dark baryons at the present day. So the annihilation, like I was mentioning before, is due to this rearrangement cross section, and the relic density is related to the perturbative cross section. And the ratio of those is something like the dark SUN gauge coupling to the minus 3, so this could be quite a large number. And if one introduces these light quarks and a kinetic mixing with the photon, then these dark baryons can annihilate to give you some gluons, which can then give you some electrons. Or dark blue balls, which then will eventually decay to electrons. So this is a mess up. Sorry about the, I don't know if it's the translation between different versions of Keynote, but I think they're all messed up here, so please bear with me. Anyway, this is the annihilation contribution to the positron or the fraction, which is plotted here on the left, or on the vertical axis. And this is the Mella data. Shown here are two different masses for the heavy quarks of 1 TeV and 1.5 TeV.
Do you assume annihilation to vectors, straight to vectors? Or?
So I assume that that the energy spectrum in positrons is flat, essentially, so that it's just
two-step analysis.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So, and I take that the dark matter density of these cues is half the observed, and the dark gauge coupling is this value at a TeV or 1.5 TeV, and so, you can get an enhanced cosmic ray positrons. Great. Scattering is a little bit trickier. It depends, sort of, at least there isn't any in this current formulation of this model, there isn't any tree level scattering, but there could be loop-induced scattering through these light quark loops with the kinetic mixing photon, which can scatter off of nuclei. So it seems likely that one can just tune this kinetic mixing to evade any possible constraint from scattering. So it's a bit less interesting.
So scattering in direct detection.
Yeah, sorry, direct detection. Yes. Scattering on nuclei. But so I'll just conclude here. The main idea that I'd like to take home is essentially just that dark matter that's composite and confined by some asymptotically free force is potentially interesting and could give some rich phenomenology. It's at least it seems likely that the dark sector, whatever it is, will probably be a bit strange. I mean, at least the visible sector is quite bizarre, so it stands to reason that the dark sector might be as well. There could be a potential boost factor in the present-day annihilation rate of these of dark matter that are confined by these gauge forces due to cross sections becoming geometric as opposed to being due to perturbative diagrams. And well, quantitative statements are difficult to make for me, anyway, at this stage of the game. So that's it.
So you're very much at the quirk limit.
Yeah, it's very.
So if you so if you want to explain to Mello or me, that fixes the mass view. So how does that compare with, let's say, LHC sensitivities to?
So it's sort of. Difficult to say, at least unless you start thinking about how exactly you couple these heavy quarks to the standard model. So they're not colored under, they don't have QCD charge.
Oh, sorry, it's not produced.
Okay. Yeah, so for better or worse, but yeah, so
worse.
Collider.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, collider wise. A bit worse, or more pessimistic in that sense.
Okay, let's continue strong interactions during coffee, and thank you.